Black is a criminal, white is the crime. Poison is the pen, writing down is a children's nursery rhyme. Didn't you see him standing next to me? But the seeds of change have grown. We don't have to hide anymore. There's a trouble on the other side. Low, 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 low. But maybe it's a trouble of a hopeful heart. There's a trouble of a hopeful heart. It doesn't take much to see. If you're looking for an enemy, greed and apathy spell the letters of our name. Yes, sit and laugh at other people falling, making money off their shame and sorrow, or waiting for tomorrow to fix itself.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
It's time to pack your bags and join us for Camp KBOO. Make a summer of memories with KBOO and support grassroots media by becoming a member today. Go to kboo.fm/give to help us reach our $50,000 goal by June 29th. Thank you.
What makes you such a threat?
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power.
Takush kashkan umpikele na yuha. Makakele. Hakantan katakum echoke keheon. Ohokichilapikte. Uchasha yechil. O makakele. Ushikichilakte. Takushicho in a koki prakte. Don't have a gluzak. Ayu. Oyate. Wakanrakele na ta. Ichahu chokyakte. On a hokichila money picte. Makakele. Ohokila. Ushikila. Heon echil.
Datangi mai eraro eave kama.
Tauri mai ngā tāringa I oni washtelo mi taku api iha chante washte na pechi zapielo ambetu washtelo mi taku api oyate dokahe wichake machia pelo na ha iha chante washte na pechi zapielo. Welcome my relatives, I shake your hands with good feelings in my heart, and the whole world is beautiful. It's good for all of us to be here. Let the people hear your voice respectfully and celebrate life. In addition to reality from the Pacifica Radio Network, this is First Voices Indigenous Radio, and I send you greetings and strength from the East Gate of Turtle Island, where the sun and the water touch the earth at once. Our website is firstvoicesradio.org. And I want to thank you today, especially for your generosity as always and for being there. You know who you are, and without you, we cannot ever continue. And I'd like to ask you to listen to something very important that will be coming up here. But first, I want to tell you, Tahi, the opening theme of First Voices Radio, ever since we've been on, excluding one or two first broadcasts back in 2002, the opening theme has always been Tahi by Moana and the Moa Hunters. And it's from the movie score Once Were Warriors, way back in 1994. And a song that recalling the unity of the Maori ancestors as they travel on great canoes from Waikiki to Aotearoa, which is New Zealand, and the hope that one day all the Maori will reclaim that sense of unity. And it's a theme, it's a general theme that all indigenous peoples have, and as well as other folks who want to reclaim that sense of unity, and really what it's all about, the relationship that we have, and that relationship that I'm talking about that we have here on First Voices Radio is to present indigenous views, news, and other events and happenings that are going around across the planet that most of you do or do not know. There are 350 million indigenous peoples left on the planet out of 7 billion. That's roughly 5%. But we speak a majority of the world's languages. 7,000 total languages spoken, about 5,600 of those are indigenous languages, but one or two or three go extinct every 2 weeks. And that's why First Voices has been here. But right now, for a woman shaman, the ancients, I just prefaced it, and I hope you enjoy it. We're going to go right there.
Jidao, invocation, calling in the spirit. Women who invoke, which means calling in the spirit. Ancient art all over the world shows women raising their arms, entering in, receiving, embracing, calling up, connecting, praise song, supplication, benediction. Rock art shows women's invocation, a female gesture repeated across continents. Here at Najran, South Arabia. Neolithic figurines also show invoking women, like the ceremonial group from Ovcharovo, Bulgaria. A parallel group from Nitafin, Canaan, dates to about 5,000 BCE. And these invoking women of Southwest Asia persisted over the millennia, as in parts of Arabia. Even in patriarchal and imperial times, when official religion increasingly marginalized women, they continued very old ceremonial ways among themselves and in cultures outside the most powerful states. These female invokers have a vast range. They're carved into stone monuments in southern Ethiopia. They're painted on wooden keru offering vessels in Peru. They're modeled in clay in Crete, the Aegean Islands, and Greece. chased in gold in the Greco-Scythian Ukraine, cast in bronze in ancient Germany, suffused with curling energy. They're carved into shell by the Hohokam, ancestors of the Tohono O'odham in Arizona. In the Benin bronzes of Nigeria, women are calling and showing their powers. Chancay women in Peru, faces painted up for ritual, calling in. Clay figurines from Zimbabwe, invoking spirit to flow in. Ceramic mikos from old Japan, calling in the kami. This is consecration. This is receiving. This the transformative power. It is this gesture of potency that pervades the oldest Kemetic art before the pharaohs. The invoking woman appears often in pre-dynastic Egypt. In rock art, a line of female devotees tow her ritual boat up the Nile. Petroglyphs depict ceremonial scenes on riverboats. Here, three women are clasping snakes or serpentine staffs. Variations on this theme, invoking woman in ceremonial boat, is repeated in countless ceramic paintings and petroglyphs. They show the prominence of women in early Kemetic ceremony in the 4th millennium BCE. Often emphasize the collective nature of these ceremonies with women in pairs, threes, or fours. Female invocators with boats and animals are also painted in a proto-dynastic tomb mural at Nechen. While the central figure has attributes of a goddess, she's not a statue, but an enactment. Presence embodied by an inspirited woman or several women. In eastern Mexico, countless clay sculptures show invoking women. They're shown journeying deep within, gathering essence. Entranced, transformed and transforming. Filled with the sacred. Chanting, dancing, and moving into exaltation. We see gestures of power of a British priestess whose other hand once held a staff. A Japanese miko pulling down spirit with one hand, directing it with the other. Or a Neolithic Moravian woman receives vital essence into her upturned palms, gazing skyward. An Etruscan woman with her palms curving toward each other in the classic Qigong stance of gathering vitality. In Benin, this gesture of holding potency in the hands symbolized the power to act. She is intent and yet open, relaxed. This clay woman of old Illinois shows a profound interior recollection. In northern Argentina, a stone supplicant raises hands to her upturned face.
All right, and as you listen to The Woman Shaman, The Ancients, and it's produced by and directed by Max Dashu, and it's revealing that record of medicine women, seers, and oracles. And I'm watching all these fantastic pictures and photographs of items and objects and rattles and bowls and just about everything that you can think of from times that we don't even see because they're overwhelmed by a patriarchal or basically that only men were shaman. But now my mind has really shifted a little bit as a male to see more of these images that I know exist. And they exist today. I mean, they exist where I come from. The women are, you know, they're not out front like men are, but the Native women are always the backbone of that culture. And I'm going to be introducing Max Dashew here, who has founded the Suppressed Histories Archives in 1970 to research and document women's history from international perspectives, and photographing thousands of slides and thousands of created hundreds of slideshows on female power and trans-historically heritaged, I guess I'd say, for lack of a better memory that I do have or don't have. For more than 40 years, Dashew has presented these talks at universities and centers and communities and bookstores and schools and prisons and galleries and all around North America, and bridging that gap between academia and the grassroots education. Grassroots education, it foregrounds indigenous women passed over by standard histories and highlighting female spheres of power retained in even patriarchal societies as today. And a introduction into the world of shaman. And I would like to thank you for being here from the West Coast. Yes, and I'm going to start this off right away so people get really interested, because I know I can hear a lot of people out there wondering, oh, it's one of those shaman things again. Yeah, and I want to clear this up, that what does shaman mean? And the second part of the question will be, why do people jump to the New Age stereotype when they hear that word?
Yeah, because the New Age marketed that term and you know, have really tried to monetize the whole thing, you know, try to make it into a money-making operation. And the problem with trying to name all of this is that, you know, it's very hard to find one word to describe something that is so global and so ancient and so broad. And so I really struggled with the name, because I'm taking in a lot of different spiritual leadership roles here. And so, you know, I thought about using medicine women. And, you know, there's some, in some cultures it would be priestesses or oracles, or, you know, you could just say healers or curanderas. English is so impoverished in names for this, because we had the witch hunts in Europe. So, you know, European languages, a lot of these names were either demonized or they just disappeared. You know, they were just crushed out. So I finally settled on using shaman, because it was a word that most people by now understand to some degree, you know, just as a bucket word.
Mm-hmm.
And go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, where does the word shaman come
from? Yeah. So the word originates from Northeast Asia in Siberia among the Evenk people. And it got taken up because of this gap in English and in other European languages as having a way to name this whole range of spiritual roles. And so it's something, you know, there was some controversy about applying it, and I talk about that in the DVD, to other cultures, but by this time it seems like a word that is something that people understand. And so I'm using it, even though, you know, we don't, in many of these cultures, we don't even know what words or names were used by the people. We don't even know, like with some of the rock art that I show, we don't even know what language they spoke. And so we have to have some kind of terminology to talk about all of this in a general way. It makes me uncomfortable, the whole New Age thing that you raised, because there's been such an appropriation of this as basically an ego trip by a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to have some way to be able to talk.
Exactly. And I kind of had my qualms too. I was like, okay, I know here I am, a Native American man, male, and, you know, I get a lot of flack for putting things on like this, and not just from Native folks or indigenous peoples, but from all across the board. But, it's in the risk of actually people learning something, their origin stories, origin words, the origin sounds that these pictures and that you have put across the years, especially here now in the woman shaman. But it's almost that marginalization that patriarchy is presented today. And let's talk about a little bit of that marginalization that has happened, because I think that's at the heat of it, an underlying denial.
Yeah. Well, you know, the academics, you know, the word got picked up from the ethnographers who were going into Eastern Asia and going, you know, okay, there's these cultures, and they have these different names that they use. And then they were comparing this with Indonesia and North America and South America and Africa and saying, wow, this is a pattern. There are certain spiritual ways that recur. There are common themes. There's also a lot of diversity in the way this all gets played out in various cultures. And so they picked out this word. And then the academic writers, particularly Mircea Eliade, who was an anthropologist that wrote this classic on quote-unquote shamanism, his theory about it was that shamans were male. The whole thing originated only with men, that it was only a hunting thing, and that women had nothing to do with it until it fell into a degraded state. You know, he basically sees that at the late stages of shamanism, and it all was sort of falling apart, and so then women got into it. So it's a very unflattering picture of women's power to begin with. And, you know, it was a Eurocentric perspective, it was a patriarchal perspective, and a lot of people still, you know, are following those ideas of thinking, well, yeah, there's only medicine men, there are no medicine women. And it's just not true. And it wasn't true in ancient times, and it's not true in modern times. And a lot has to do with the gatekeepers through which our information all gets filtered. And so, you know, as you were saying, you know, there are medicine women in the native world, the indigenous world, but they don't get written about as much. They don't necessarily have books written about them. There are some. But what I wanted to do is to look at the cultural record and say, well, all right, you know, in the rock murals, I did a lot of research into rock art in the great galleries of from Utah to Baja, you know, New Mexico, that whole chunk of southwestern America, and in the Sahara, southern Africa, Australia. There's certain regions that are the murals were painted over thousands of years, and they go back tens of thousands of years. And so I was looking at that art, and because I had already found some examples there, which made me think there's got to be more. And so, okay, let's look and see if there are any female images of leading ceremony. And I found women with staffs and with rattles and ecstatic dances and sometimes shapeshifters with animal powers, animal spirit beings that they either work with or that they actually are, that's part of them, maybe their ancestral heritage, so that you will see in Libya women with horns and double bird heads and, you know, just a lot of this kind of stuff. And I wanted to look for patterns in all of this and see what, you know, there were certain themes that came up over and over again, like the sacred staff. And so you would have women dancing with staffs or holding staffs while they're wearing ceremonial regalia. And, you know, masks or their bodies painted up with, you know, white clay or red ochre. And so this is just a way of looking in. It's all before, in most cases, before any kind of writing occurred. But this was their writing. It was they were recording their worldview through painting, or sometimes by etching on rocks.
You know, and I'm thinking, okay, I'm looking at this, and as one who's been through a lot of New Age brouhaha and all this, you know, and getting it because I happen to be an indigenous person, that I. You know, then I start to really think about history in a sense that women were close to the ground, close to, you know, that they were the herbalist. So why wouldn't the women be also medicine women? Because they knew, they would know the plants to pick. And I think this was one of the main reasons, for my little knowledge, why 12 million women were, was it 12 million or 9 million women in Europe were destroyed because of their knowledge of the plants, and that, you know, that Inquisition time when the patriarchal God came through and just kind of wiped out the people of Earth, basically, the women. And I think that's where today's modern stereotypical ideas look down on and deny the values of women, in the sense that they don't know much unless they are taught by men.
Yeah, I mean, there are all kinds of ways that, you know, female spheres of power or just this medicine knowledge that women, and I mean, I'm not saying there were no medicine men. I don't want to reverse
right,
the picture,
right,
you know.
Right.
But just to restore knowledge of the fact that in some cultures, most of the medicine people were women. This is even true in up to recent centuries. You know, so there's a very, really diverse picture. Depending on where you are in the world, you know, what you're talking about. And certainly the European witch hunt is one example. And there are other places, too, that those repressions happen, where you have women driven out of public spiritual leadership. The other reason I had for using the word shaman is it does bring to mind a kind of spiritual practice that is not just in the head. It really is praying with the body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's the chant and the incantation, and there's the use of sacred substances, you know, that especially transformations of consciousness. This is what is it connotes. It kind of brings into mind the idea that, you know, we only use like a tiny percentage of our brain in the modern world. The way people live most of the time is they're on kind of a flattened consciousness and separated from the earth. And so when you're living with your full capacity, there are all these states of being you can enter into, and you can really, like a lot of the traditions talk about how the time when people could talk to the animals, you know, and that there's this ancestral realm of consciousness that can be accessed. It's out of time. The Australian people call it the dream time. You know, that you are able to come to a point where you can access knowledge about everything. You know, healing power, prophetic power. You can talk to the animals. You can talk to the plants. The ancestors are there with you because you are out of time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we live in time, so we become really bound to that. But these ways involved, you know, even with the ghost dance, you know, there are, that's a medicine path where people were in extreme emergency, extreme trauma from the European conquest, and so they reached out to those ways, and, you know, they would dance for hours and chanting and calling ancestral beings, and sometimes fall to the ground in a visionary state. And they would see again those who had been slain. Now, you know all this, but, you know, I'm saying that these are things that there's all kinds of ways that this manifests itself.
Mm-hmm.
And even in Europe, in the late Middle Ages, when you had the plague and you had people were being oppressed terribly by the feudal system, church and state, right?
Mm-hmm.
There were dance movements of ecstatic dance that swept across Europe. And the church treated this as demonic. Oh, these people are possessed by devils. But what they were doing was very similar to the ghost dance. They were saying, okay, you know, things are out of balance. We have to use sacred dance, again, as a way to approach spirit and to put things back into harmony.
Yeah, it makes sense, because growing up in a place where you were taught dance was, you know, a certain way, and that had to be stiff and upright and very reserved, rather than the old way the native people dance was, you know, to just to get into the movement and like you would see at powwows today, you know, they are that way now because we're allowed to after freedom of religion. But I have a question for you that just popped in my mind about, and it's going to go back, and maybe I'm you know, beating a dead horse here, but when this New Age phenomenon came in, there seemed to be a burst of information where everyone wanted to be a shaman, and then and today it's overused, and everybody has become so heavenly that they're no earthly good, and I look at it and I think about all these people who have been away from natural ways of living. From Mother Earth, that there's a lost sense of self, and now those peoples who are hurriedly, scurriedly running to get their shaman whatever qualifications in other countries and whatnot, mm-hmm. that it's a sign of human identity crisis going on here in the Western world.
Definitely, and it's you know, there's several things happening, because one is this sense of cultural exile, and that's real. You know, that they know that the culture, we know that the culture that we're existing in is totally impoverished spiritually. So there's that part. But then the other part is, because of that culture, I mean, people are still affected by that culture. And so there's an ego trip involved. You know, it's like, okay, they're the important people and they're powerful. And then, you know, there's this idea that, you know, yes, oh God, well, I'm a shaman. You know, these people drive me crazy that walk around, I am a shaman. You know, they'll announce to you stuff like this, you know. Mm-hmm. And yet, so they're trying to leverage it in ways that are really contaminated culturally with all these diseased ideas, I guess, mm-hmm. is the best way to put it. And, you know, there's Zulu, Isangoma, I heard one time, who was talking about this craving of Westerners to stampede toward, they're going to buy this, that they're going to pay for a course, they're going to travel somewhere, and that is going to somehow qualify them. You know, they're going to take some sacred plants and have visions, and then that's going to make them a shaman. And he said, you don't understand that in our culture, people don't seek this out. It's not an easy path. It's a path of service and sacrifice, service to the people. And, you know, they think that it's some kind of, you know, prestigious thing, and it's going to be really great because they have these powers. And, you know, they really just basically don't get that, you know, you don't just decide, I'm going to do this and then go pay for it, especially not that. But, you know, that you have to, in some way, there are ancestral beings that come into contact with you, and you get chosen, and you may suffer a lot in the process. You know, even just the crying for a vision, those traditions, you have to give up a lot. You have to go without water and be cold out on a mountain somewhere for days, mm-hmm. you know, with no food. And really, it involves it's a very deep giving up, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so it really horrifies me, because there's many ways in which sincere people who have, like myself, who are trying to find our ways back to our authentic spiritual roots, watch this steamroller of New Age going over everything, and, you know, all of the corruptions, the $500 workshops and the fake sweat lodges and all the things that are happening, you know, really, they get in the way. And they get in a huge amount of distortion and appropriation. And that's not the way.
Thank you.
right. Welcome back to First Voices Radio. I'm speaking with Max Dasher, who founded the Suppressed History Archives in 1970 to research and document women's history from an international perspective. And we're talking about spiritual cannibalism. And if that interests you, please listen to the rest of this interview with Max Dasher. Yeah, it is not the way. And as I was watching this, I was reminded of, because you show many, many pictures and photos of petroglyphs and hieroglyphs and just about everything on from pottery to staffs. But you know, a lot of them are women. And I'm also going to continue this line we're on, this jack of all trades shaman that we see now. And has, you go into somebody's little altar and they have a feather here and they have something from another and a crystal here and all these things that doesn't make sense, but confusion, the word confusion makes sense of it. And it's such that it's made and really, a degradation, I would say, a detriment to spirituality, where it's made spirituality so superstitious rather than an everyday real life, event that a lot of indigenous peoples across the planet are living. Because it's every day. It's in our conversations every day that it's not Sunday or, you know, a Friday night seance or something like that. But, you know, I'm not, you know, with all due respect, whatever that is. But I'm just saying that this jack of all trades shaman is part of the bringing down and the loss of identity that seems to be, it's the means to its own end. Because it often goes back into the religious context from which the people sought it out in the first place.
Yeah, and it's a kind of, as Jack Forbes would say, it's a kind of spiritual cannibalism, you know, to do that. You know, a little bit from this, a little bit from that. And, you know, that's not the way. But I think that what's going to have to happen is, because of the spiritual emergency that so many people are in, you know, and there has been a movement to do this, is to go back and find your own authentic traditions and rebuild. Because the same place that all of this originated from the beginning, which is the land, Mother Earth, the waters, you know, the forests and all of the beings, our relatives that were part of this circle, those visions and those understandings and that wisdom are accessible. We can go back to it, but it can't be done in the commercialized way, that the corrupt way that you see so much going on. Mm-hmm. You know, it has to be done in a humble way, and it has to be done through a lot of really sincere seeking and building back up from the ground.
Mm-hmm. This woman shaman, the ancients, it goes through things like invocation to the commentary at the end, which I really enjoyed hearing that whole summation. It seemed like you had to use these words in order to identify, what really people are generally talking about. And I could see the generalizations in it by the words you're using, but it really does describe those photos and, you know, the silence that was denied, or actually the silenced women from everywhere, from every continent, hundreds of cultures. And it's just watching this, it's just like, it's overwhelming for me to watch this thing here. Right now we have on the line Max Dasher, who is a producer of this Women Shaman, the Ancients. We only heard the first part of it, Max, and I'm really interested in getting to some really other places that just sort of, if I could say it, kick ass, you know, spiritually, that you have to really understand this to, and really get into the education of it and see why. And what I noticed is I start noticing other things out in this regular Mickey Mouse and McDonald's culture, I call it, called America, is out there. There are some things that are indicating that this still exists, even in this denial culture. But it's hinted, and no one really talks about it. So we're still iconically looking at the male side of life, and I know that's changing. And I just wanted to get your ideas on that value of the paradigm has already shifted, but people are still
waiting for it to happen, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the need, people are recognizing the need. And, you know, there's still a lot of confusion because they're not really quite sure how to put their foot on the ground. I mean, the people who don't have a living cultural base to draw on, who I'm talking about there. Mm-hmm. But even, you know, there's a lot of indigenous people who, you know, they were adopted out into white families, mm-hmm. or, you know, for other reasons, because of colonization, and because of cultural repression, you know, the persecution of Native religion, you know, has had a big impact also, so that, you know, you have people, but they have a living well to go back to, mm-hmm. you know, even the powwow culture, you know, there's yep. just, there's so much there. And so this recovery has to happen. And people need to even know what that looks like, because it's so different from the sit down in front of a minister at church who talks at you model of spiritual, mm-hmm. you know, if you can call it spiritual. And yet, you know, there's ways that this, I mean, I look at African American culture, and there's ways in which that praying with the body and that direct working with the true self, you know, in a lot of the ecstatic ceremonies in the Black church, you know, you do have that where, you know, people will go into deep states of consciousness. You know, and there's a lot of what I would call hybrids, where there's this mixture of either Buddhism or Christianity or Islam with these older ways that weren't entirely lost. You know, some cultures managed to keep that all going.
And you're saying that we can, no matter how much we try to as humans, we can't get away from the being of being natural, and no matter what, it's going to show up. The old ways, it's in our DNA to do that, to feel energy and to know without making it into religion or spirit that it's energy, and whether or not we are tuned into or not, it has a lot to be said, left to be said. So, but I want to thank you for being here. I just want to give you the last word in this whole picture.
Okay, well, I wanted to say that I hope people will, they can see the trailer on suppressedhistories.net, and there's just so much to look at there, from China, from a lot of things from Mexico, from the Andes, and it's at least a starting point, because that's the way I look at this, is it's just a beginning at attempting to reset the conversation so that it's not the so-called great religions, but it's really about the true global picture, and that means looking at the female side, which is vast. You know, all of human experience is vast, but the female side has really been slighted, and to try and recover that and give that as a resource, you know, as a starting point for a conversation about our birthright, who we really are, and not as a way of appropriating. You know, birthright means you have to get back your stuff, you know, and not take somebody else's.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's good words. Thank you, Max Dashew, for being here. Thanks for the interview.
Thank you.
All right. This is First Voices Indigenous Radio. And folks, you know, you just heard Max Dashew, who is a producer and director of Woman Shaman, the Ancient.
A better place to hide.
I'm looking for the light.
Last night I had a dream. 1 million people turned away.
My people crying.
My people crying. My people dying. My people looking for the light.
My people looking for the light.
Voices Radio. My name is Teal Kazan Ghost Horse. As we listen to and fade out, Robert Mirabel with The Dream way back in the 90s. And that's Robert. I like that once in a while. It's got a lot of energy to it. And that's what it is. First Voices Radio on, so that we continue to bring you news and views, history about indigenous peoples all over the world. And again, I'll tell you that the 7,000 languages spoken totally in the world, of 5,600 of those are indigenous, and they're an endangered language. All 5,600 of those languages are endangered, and 1 to 3 every 2 weeks goes extinct. And this is why we need to retain that knowledge, understand that we also too, and I said this, I've always said this, that we are all indigenous, but most of us have forgotten how to be indigenous. And lately I've been getting, but who cares? Who cares? 5% of the world. In another few years, there'll be less indigenous peoples and less indigenous peoples. Will the world be any better when we're all gone in 80 years? All those languages in 80 years or so will be gone by my calculations. 52 languages plus a year going extinct. This is why indigenous ways, indigenous thought processes, I like to say, need to be here, because it helps the world. It helps Mother Earth. Those languages are Mother Earth languages. The reasons why that those languages, I feel, are not soluble in today's marketplace is because they're not a marketable language. And because most of those indigenous languages do not have the word for domination, nor the concept of it, where the marketable languages, the 1,400 or so, have that aggressive greed, marketability, ownership, possession, because those languages, Latin-based languages, especially around in Europe or so, the English, the Spanish, the Portuguese, you go on, the French, all those languages are dominant languages. They use the word dominance, and they are the Roman language. They derive from the Roman language. And what that means is that that language, 60% of English that I'm speaking is Latin-oriented, the Roman language, that conquering, dominating, destroying war, that defines peace through war, ownership, patriarchal, destroying Mother Earth language. So this is the differences between the indigenous folks who are trying hard to protect Mother Earth, not just the land or their land. It's protecting Mother Earth is at the heart of it. It's at the agenda, at the forefront of these agendas that most indigenous folks today. There's a lot of selling out now. The pressure is too great. And this is part of the reason, you know, because if you're taken away from the land and your source of life and made into a resource, Mother Earth is made into a resource, then of course it's going to be shared, which is another greed terminology, but not just given like Mother Earth. I don't think Mother Earth shares, she gives. These ways have been and can still contain value way back and have gone deep beyond the history that we know, have gone to recover this. We need to recover this, and it's recovering now, and we need to keep that and continue that process. First Voices Radio, again, my name is Teoxin Ghost Horse. I want you to be here. I wish I could talk to each of you.
Here is Bob Dylan with Hurricane.
You said you saw the getaway car, thinking like to talk to your friend Bello. You don't want to have to go back to jail, be a nice fellow. You'll be doing society a favor. That son of a bitch is brave and getting braver. We want to put his ass in the stir. We want up in this triple murder. Take a man out with just one punch, but he never did like to talk about it all that much. It's my work, he'd say, and I do it for pay. And when it's over, just as soon go on my way up to some paradise where the trout streams flow and the air is nice, and ride a horse along the trail. But then they took him to the jailhouse where they tried to turn a man. All of Reuben's cards were marked in advance. The trial was a pig circus. He'd never had a chance. The judge made Reuben's witnesses drunkards from the slums. To the white folks who watched, he was a revolutionary bum. And to the black folks, he was just a crazy nigger. No one doubted that he pulled the trigger. And though they could not produce the gun, the DA said he was the one who did the deed. And the old Algeria agreed. Reuben Carter was falsely tried. The crime was murder one. Guess who testified? The ride. How can the life of such a man be in the palm of some fool's hand? To see him obviously framed couldn't help but make me feel ashamed to live in a land where justice is a gift. And their ties. I'm free to drink martinis and watch the sunrise. While Reuben sits like Buddha in a 10-foot cell, an innocent man in a living hell. Yes, that's the story of the hurricane. But it won't be over till they clear his name and give him back the time he's done. Put in a prison cell, but one time he could have been the champion of the world.
You've been listening to First Voices Radio. I'm Teo Kusen Ghost Horse. Doksha Ake Wachyankatelo.
This is Bill McKibben coming at you on KBOO Portland, Oregon.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy lunes 2 de junio del 2021.